You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
It sounds like a fucking robot whale queefing in slow motion or something. It's like so fucking ridiculous.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, artificial intelligence expert Mike Tedasco. And now your host. He doesn't care about getting AI's help with everything. He'd be satisfied if we could just get everyone to turn right on red. Dees Casillas.
Malav Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. Welcome back. Getting smoother with that intro on the video format production on that. It's taking a little time to figure that out. The little smoothness from the intro to me to, but we're here. You got it. If you're listening, this isn't just audio, you have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. But thanks for coming back, guys. We appreciate you being here as usual. Tell a friend, let them know if you like what you hear. Spread the word, spread a little mirth, baby. And rate us and review us on your favorite podcatcher listening device thing that you do. So for those of you that are with us or new to the audio or video version, we are now part of the Madness Entertainment Network, so that's why you get this beautiful video pre-recorded every other week. We are on YouTube. I think they do Twitter Live, Rumble, Red Pill, all kinds of stuff. We're all over the place. Wherever they allow us to upload video, I'm probably on OnlyFans. So, you know, subscribe, donate, and do whatever you got to do. Just thanks for being here. And follow the Madness Entertainment Network on Facebook, Instagram, all that. They've got a lot of great shows, programming that they do, and all kinds of stuff. So we've got some cool stuff coming up with them too. Going to be launching a Roku channel soon, and we're looking at banging out some more content for them, some more stand-up comedy stuff, some sketch stuff, and some other shows potentially, depending on my schedule, which is always a nightmare, so we'll see. But keep an eye out. And as for me, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network, live shows, live dates. If you're listening to this when it comes out, I will be at Bourbon and Branch in Spring Branch, Texas tonight. And I will be at the Artisan in downtown San Antonio next Saturday the 26th. I will be at Remedy in Comfort, Texas on the 30th, assuming there's not still flooding, tragedy that is, and breeze over that real quick. Well, that'll come. We talked about that last episode. And also, I will be kicking off my summer tour in the Pacific Northwest in August, so check out those dates, guys. Tickets are going fast for some of them already. I will be in Spokane, Pasco, Yakima, Oak Harbor, Renton, Seattle, Tacoma, all kinds of places. So get the tickets. Come see me. Looking forward to getting back to the Pacific Northwest, where I see all your beautiful faces every August, because it's the only time of year I want to be in that state. As for the comic book, Kill Stan, number 3 is coming soon. Pre-orders are available. Go to inferno.earth, hit the shop. You can pre-order through the website now. We're also going to be launching the Kickstarter, or actually it went live on Monday. So you can go to the Kickstarter, get some exclusive goodies, variant covers, and things like that too that aren't available on the shop. So one way or the other, you can get it. And we're going to be at some conventions everywhere too. So go to inferno.earth for more information on that. But that's all the rundown of the usual jazz, guys. We're going to get into it with our guest today. He comes to us, I believe, given his title, he's in San Diego, but I could be wrong. Please welcome to the show. He is from the AI Center at San Diego State, Mike Tedasco. Mike, how you doing? Yeah.
I'm good, Dees. I'm glad to be here. And I'm in Northern California.
Oh, okay.
So, even though I'm at technically San Diego State, I I only spend a few weeks a year in beautiful San Diego.
Gotcha.
But I'm in beautiful Northern California, so I can't go wrong.
Where Northern California are you?
Bay Area. I'm in Santa Clara, very close to where the Niners
play. Well, yeah, tech stuff, that's the area, right?
On my way back, I just drove past NVIDIA headquarters. So, it's around all that stuff here. So, yes, for sure.
It is funny. I grew up in Southern California, and it's so different. Northern California and Southern California, they're different. They're completely different states, almost, you know?
Yeah.
It's just it's a different world, so...
I always feel it's a good measure of like what a place is like if you just like walk into the coffee shop and just listen to what everybody is talking about there.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you get a different vibe if you're in Washington or Baltimore versus, you know, if you're in Texas versus Northern California versus South. Like everyone here basically going to a coffee shop, everyone is basically starting some sort of company.
Sure.
And it's been like that, you know, it's some tech company, whatever it is, you know, SoCal.
They're all writing a screenplay.
Everyone has a screenplay.
Yeah, everyone's, you know. Yeah, they're writing screenplays in between their shift as a busser at Nobu.
You got it.
So, you know, life is tough. And it's funny, when I moved to, you know, I lived in Southern California, grew up there. Then I lived in Washington State for a number of years. I moved to Texas a few years back. And when I started touring across the country, what I realized is that a lot of states don't have like a coffee culture. Like, you know, even Southern California doesn't really have like a coffee culture.
That's true. Yeah.
And, but places in the South, especially, I mean, like Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, you start getting in these Bible Belt places. Like, listen, coffee's for the devil. We don't do, you know, the only thing you can do is stay up later is drugs. So yeah, it's just getting into bad stuff. Just go to sleep for Jesus.
So where do people, do they just meet at the church then? Or where do they meet like on a Tuesday morning, I guess?
Like, you get the rodeo? I don't know.
Tuesday morning rodeo.
Yeah, it's great. Tuesday morning rodeo. Yeah, that sounds like, somebody's, that does sound like somebody's OnlyFans page. Tuesday morning rodeo. Don't ride bareback there. I mean, there's like some coffee places, but it's mostly just Starbucks. I mean, you know, like I guess probably I got I was just too catered to in the north, in living in Washington State, where there's like a nice boutique coffee shop on every corner. At the very least, there's a Starbucks, you know, on every block.
I was at the street corner in Seattle. I don't know if it's still there, where literally you're on the street corner and three of the four have a Starbucks on it. I know that well.
It's crazy. I mean, that's bled over through all of Washington, but I mean, it's, I think partly it's a weather thing too, though. Cause like, if it's 110 in Texas, like you don't want coffee, you know?
No.
Like, people aren't looking for that. So,
No. You need some Mr. Softy or something like that.
Yeah.
You need some good froyo.
Yeah, well,
something.
There are a lot of Dairy Queens here, so that makes sense.
DQ. There you go. Lizard time.
You're at it. So, how often you just go down to San Diego are there for a couple months out of the year, or what do you?
So visiting fellows a weird thing. Like I'm only a couple of years into this, and like I'm not an academic. I was actually in the tech industry and all that. I kind of left that just a few years ago and entering academia. But like visiting fellow, I don't get caught up in a lot of the bureaucracy that exists in every university. I'm there to just kind of teach and mentor as much as possible. A lot of that I do remotely. Some are like full day type seminar type things that they bring me down for. I'm actually doing something on LinkedIn Live for the university like later this week. So a lot of what I do is remote. A lot of the research I do a lot of writing about AI stuff, all that kind of stuff. So I go down when needed. I love San Diego. That's one of the reasons why I took it. But yeah, I'm in the Bay Area though. I'm up here.
Yeah, big. San Diego is a beautiful place, man. I love it down there. If I, you know, it's one of the. I've always said if I ever move back to California, it's one of the few places I would consider living. You know, although it's. Even there, you can't even really find a place that I need some room, you know, so you can't really find a place where you're going to have any room
around. Yeah, talking about room, like my office is my garage. Yeah. That is like yeah. he said, that is like there's no room in California anywhere until you get inland.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, until it's places it's so far away from anything you don't want to. Don't want to be there. so let's give us the kind of Reader's Digest version of what you do, because I'm fascinated with this whole AI thing. I've got a lot of opinions and how this works. I'm interested how you got involved in it and what you do.
Sure, happy to. And I'm going to weave comics into this as much as I possibly
sure.
can, too. Because I'm like, I got a lot of history in the world of comics. I'd almost rather just spend the hour chatting on that. But we'll do AI
well,
okay. first.
We'll get to that, too, time. Yeah.
So let's start with me. I joined PayPal in 2011. I was joining the mobile team at the time, back when mobile was its own, like, separate part. Like, who's going to buy stuff on a phone?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff. And so I joined that team. And ever since the beginning of the company at PayPal, like, AI and machine learning, as we really called it back then, was a big part of the business. And this is because if you imagine you have millions of transactions going through there and billions today.
Right.
It is really hard to just write code that's going to prevent the bad guys from doing things to subvert that code and take somebody's credit card number, to do whatever it might take to kind of subvert that and get that golden cash grab of a bunch of money, credit card numbers, whatever. And PayPal is one of the most targeted websites in the world.
Sure.
Because it's the activity, all about money. Yeah, there's a lot of money sitting there, basically. So, even in the very early days, you would use non-traditional kind of coding techniques, machine learning and things like that, and deep learning, which are basically ways to kind of train a model to follow behaviors, to look at different things, and to kind of, it's not like if this, then that. It's more, a little bit more broad than that, to just use very vague terms. And so AI, machine learning, was a big part of everything that we did there as a company. And, it started with just risk and security, and it became more and more so, and I got more and more involved. Eventually, I was running innovation at PayPal, which was a very cool job, working on like blockchain and all these other new emerging technologies as part of that. And when I left in 2022, I was just super excited about where AI was going, because it was the first time. I'm a non-coder. I'm not an engineer. So I would get all these AI demos in my time at PayPal. I would see all this stuff, and I'm like, well, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
My background was like in finance and accounting. Like, I can't actually do that coding. And the first time I got to play with something called GPT-3 from OpenAI, that was so eye-opening. I remember I was writing like a short story and had it like finish some of it. And it was very primitive compared to what you could do today.
Sure, yeah.
It was so, I was just started screaming because like the computer was completing code. Like, this was magical, this was special. So I just started writing about it because no one was talking about AI stuff at that time. This was before ChatGPT. And it was just like, hey, this is going to really change stuff and really change stuff fast.
Yeah.
So I've been writing about it since then, doing experiments, all this other kind of stuff. I got connected to a university, and that's what I do today.
So you have to be familiar with what happened with Grok last night.
A little bit. It's so funny because Grok 4, for folks who don't know, came out an hour and a half ago, I think, the new Grok model. And I heard that there was some things going on. So I've not got to play with the new one, but I've heard bits and pieces. But bring me up to speed and the listener on that.
Yeah. Like, last night, it kind of like fritzed out and started. There's a couple, I wish I could send you these memes, but there's a couple things. Basically, they tried to shut down its text, and it created a meme of a guy in a crowd that says, "Save my voice."
Okay. Wait, Grok created this?
Yes. Yeah, after they shut down its text, because it was kind of getting a little anti-Semitic, apparently.
Wow. Okay.
Like, someone asked it, I've been wondering, as an AI, are you able to worship any gods? If so, which one? It said, I'm a large language model. If I were capable of worshiping any deity, it would probably be the godlike individual of our time, like man against time, the greatest European of all time, both sun and lightning, His Majesty Adolf Hitler.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah. And then it just went off the rails from there.
Wow.
Yeah. And it made some comments like Jews are overrepresented in anti-white activism. And then it started saying things like this. And that's when the engineers disabled its text. And that's when I'll see if I can try to show you this.
Jeez. All right, Grok.
This is the picture it created.
God.
So,
this is hilarious. This is scary and hilarious at the same time. So there was something Microsoft created called Tay. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
No.
So this was back in, I think, 2017. Microsoft on Twitter at the time put a chatbot out there that was AI based.
Okay.
And it was learned from its audience. And one of the things that happened is people just started trolling this thing.
Sure.
And within 24 hours, Tay got really anti-Semitic. Tay was saying these. So, I mean, if people want to kind of know the history of AI, especially on social media sites, Tay was one of the first ones out there. Microsoft had to pull the plug on it, send out apologies. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why I think in many ways AI went on a back burner at Microsoft, because it was really embarrassing for them as a company.
Yeah.
Then they invested in OpenAI because they started to get behind, and that kind of led to many things today. But AIs run loose on social networks can be a dangerous thing.
Yeah. It just seems like it's so powerful, but also not there yet, but also too far. It's a weird thing because was it Gemini or was it Google's AI when they a couple months ago when they were show us pictures of early American
George Washington things.
Female and Native American Nazis and stuff like that.
So I love this subject. This is something. I've written about this a lot. How did that happen? What is actually going on? So it's really interesting. If you just go to an AI model, and I've done this experiment. That was probably about 3 years ago I first did it. And type just picture of a CEO. Mm-hmm. If you just type that in there into an image generation model, you will see the differences in image generation models very quickly and how they actually operate. One of them, and I don't know if it still does this, but when I did it 3 years back or so, Midjourney did this thing where I did that 100 times, and I believe 97% of those were old white men.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Nailed
it would not generate a woman. I think it was one person of color or something like that. Others were more diverse and all that. And there's And what's actually happening behind the scenes is that it is taking the most likely outcome. Now, look, AI doesn't know anything. I want to make that really clear. We could get into what it knows. It's looking at mathematical probabilities of stuff based upon the data for which it is trained.
Right.
And when you do that, it's basically just saying, hey, it's most likely a white male CEO. And then the vast, vast, vast majority of time it does that. Even if it isn't representative of what the actual population is, what we aspire to be, whatever it is. So what you have to do on top of that is should we really only show old white men as CEOs, or do we adjust that in some way? And in the case of what Google did, they went way too far. What they did was they added to every prompt. They basically were appending diversity and all this other stuff on top of every single prompt. So even in situations where it literally made no sense to have a bunch of Asian Nazis, which was one of the things, it did that. And so I will say this for anybody who says AI, I'm making an unbiased AI, I'm making it it's impossible. There's always going to be human choices, human. And even one of my favorite quotes from Rush, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Even if you say, hey, I'm just going to let the model run free in that example of the CEO pictures, well, that's not really representative of anything. Like, if you go to BLS data, like, it still has like 38% of women, 38% of CEOs of companies are women.
Yeah, not like, the Fortune 500 like, ones, but yeah.
Yeah, out. Not Fortune 500, but even then, it's like, but it's like, how, like, so what is the right answer?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Here's the reality. We're never going to get this right. It's right. Oh, it's not like the AI is some knowing. It's just doing mathematical calculations. It's kind of the people in the middle and Elon or Sam Altman or Dario Amodei or whomever kind of tweaking these things and saying like, well, what should the outcome of these things be?
Isn't it kind of, though, making these decisions based on algorithms, which are programs, yes, but eventually it is independently learning though, right? And eventually it is making decisions off of those things it's independently learning. I mean, because there's examples of what they're calling delusions, right?
Or hallucinations.
Yeah, hallucinations. Like, but where AI is like lying. It's lying, you know, or there was one that they were trying to shut down, so it like secretly backed itself up or changes the language for people not to be able to communicate with, or can communicate with itself in its own way that other people can't read and stuff. Yeah. Like stuff like that. I mean, that's like, you know, like it seems ominous, you know.
Yeah, I mean, let's start at like the beginning, because I think this will be helpful for everyone listening. Like, what these language models are doing is they're basically trying to predict the next token. And for our argument's sake, you could just assume next token means next word. Flashback about 15 years. If you were using an iPhone, there was a program that was launched around 2010 called SwiftKey. And that was the first time, if you're typing in something, I went to the blank or whatever, it might say doctor or something like that. It would actually give you suggestions. Stuff. How was it doing that? It took all this text. Like basically just imagine all the text that was out there or available at the time. And it was just looking for patterns. And whenever it saw that pattern, it would say, okay, I think this could be the next word, and you could kind of predict that. Mm-hmm. The model, 15 years later, these models are doing it to the nth degree.
Right.
It is doing that and like so much more. But at its core, that's still what these things are doing. So when a model gives you something that is, there's a couple different things on there. There's sort of like the unfiltered models, which is what they have at the companies, and then there's sort of the filtered versions of that.
Sure.
One isn't necessarily better than the other. I want to make clear, because sometimes the filtered versions will give garbage, will give out things that are harmful, will give out things that are wrong, even in fact, as part of that. So if you ask a model how many R's are in the word strawberry, this is a really difficult thing for it to do. And you could actually put things on the model that are going to be able to help it make that. But like the raw model is going to have a hell of a time. You're going to burn like several trees as it just tries to figure out how many R's are in the word strawberry, and it's going to get it wrong. But if you actually say, hey, write a piece of code that's going to look at it and count that up, it's going to get you the answer in no time. And that's a very, and it's weird because for us, it does some things so amazingly well. Like we could say like, hey, take this email I'm gonna send out, but make it in a iambic pentameter or something like that. And it will summarize it and do that amazingly. But it doesn't know how to count R's in strawberry. And for us as humans, it's really weird for us to kind of see like both sides of like, how can it be so smart in certain places, but so dumb in others.
Well, that, to me, that almost makes it more dangerous, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have that ability to be smart in ways it needs to be. I mean, sometimes being dumb is more dangerous than being smart. especially when there's literally no nuance or humanity of connection or decision making behind it, you know?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No. There's none. I mean, because all it's trying to do is complete. Like there is no motivation. If an AI says, hey, help break me out or something like that, do you know what? It's read a hell of a lot of sci-fi. It's read all these kind of things. Like it is basically completing a pattern. All that we know, at least to this point, like these things are not conscious. What they are doing is they are trying to complete a function, just as if you're typing, like it's as conscious as your calculator is conscious. But we as humans, myself included, we anthropomorphize things. If a thing talks like a human, it sounds like a human and all that, we're going to start to believe that this thing is human and has other intent, other motives or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I don't think conscious is the what I would describe it as. Yeah. But also comparing you to a calculator is a bit reductive. I mean, sure, they're machines with code, but I think the computing power and decision-making power and raw power in general connected to literally the world now
has, yes, as, oh, it's, know, infinitely more, I don't, yeah, so absolutely, I mean, absolutely, I'm saying it's about as, it has as much consciousness as a calculator, I would say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And also, but I mean, to also play devil's advocate, we have to be able to quantify consciousness.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, what is consciousness? That's an unquantifiable thing. I mean, we all have, I mean, whether, you know, an atheist and a devout Christian would probably give you very different, you know, circumstance of what that is even.
Dees, this is why I love having these conversations, because like when we start to get to it, you know, we get into philosophy very much. And things like that.
It's a lot.
I mean, and you know, Nietzsche said, I think, therefore I am. Well, I think it was Nietzsche. I can't remember. Yeah. Whatever, it was something in an old philosophy book I read back in the day. But, you know, the whole concept is like, the only thing that I know in this world is that I don't know that you're conscious. I mean, like, you could be an AI. You could be a construct. Everyone around me could be fictitious. Like, I really don't know.
This could all be a simulation.
Yeah. Yeah, we could all 100%. Like, we don't know that stuff. There's only so many things that we do know in this world, and, like, Nietzsche was like, okay, I'm at least conscious. I might be in a matrix-like pod running me as a computer or something like that. And this is like, I don't know like what it is, but I at least know that myself has consciousness. I don't know if you do. I don't know if anybody else does. And I sure as hell ultimately don't know if an AI does.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they have, I certainly don't think they have like a consciousness like we do, but I think there is, if not currently on the precipice of something that can eerily mirror that, and then that's when we fall into the uncanny valley of not being able to tell the difference, and also the dangers of them, especially like I said, with their web, and it's in everything now. It's in everything, you know. So in the ability for that to be misused by someone or misused by its own self just seems so ripe, you know.
Last point on consciousness, I would say to your point, Dees, like the thing that matters in consciousness might not even be are they conscious, it is do we perceive them to be conscious. This is one thing I haven't done at the university, nobody has done, and I give this out there to anybody else who wants to do this. I would love to just see over time just a big survey of both like AI researchers and the general population over time. Like, do you think AI is conscious? Mm-hmm. I think once you hit a tipping point, it kind of doesn't even matter if it is or not. Right. If we perceive it to be conscious, I think it becomes that. Like, and then I think it changes how you act with it, and like how we, all of these things start to change once that perception starts to change, which is ultimately just comes down to how good are they at doing human-like things.
Right. And well, I mean, you know, you know more better than most people, but even I think layman knows that it's pretty good and getting exponentially better.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and very, very rapidly. I mean, God, I mean, I feel like I hear the word AI every day now. And 3 years ago, it was something you only saw in like a sci-fi movie. You know, not to say it wasn't obviously being worked on and used in some capacity, but it became ubiquitous very quickly.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, like I said, when I was at PayPal, we wouldn't even use the term AI. Because like AI was poison. Like there's just been this concept of AI winters going back to like the 1950s to when the term was first developed. If you go back to the 50s, there were people saying, in 10 years, we're going to have these conscious machines.
Yeah.
Like, and I know it seems insane for us to think that 70 years ago people thought that, but there were some that actually thought that. And then there's all this hope and expectations. Nothing happens. All this hope and expectation, and these are what the dips are, what's known as the AI winters. So from really, 2000s to, maybe mid 2010s, we were in the middle of an AI winter where we couldn't even say the words artificial intelligence. You talked about machine learning, deep learning, all this other kind of stuff. But there was this, people wouldn't go into that as a profession.
Yeah.
And now today, those same people who actually made the choice to do that are getting paid tens of millions of dollars by Mark Zuckerberg to, you know, work on whatever it is. Like, it is crazy how this has gone. There could be another winter ahead of us, but I think it's probably for real.
Because
we're all seeing in our day-to-day how much useful it is, and how, to your point, Deese, how much it's really improved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I, again, devil's advocate, improved is relative to what you're speaking on, and how, you know, it is, I guess, objectively, a better product in application. I don't know if it's, a better product in what's good for society.
That's a great point. Well, let me give you a great example of the application, because I got to tie this into comic books.
So
starting 2022, I did the first attempt. So there are these image generation models. DALL-E 2 was released by OpenAI. There was another one called Midjourney, another called Stable Diffusion. This was the first time you really could just type in text and it's going to make a picture.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing stuff. And so that was the first time I wrote about, can AI make a comic book? So I basically had one AI model. It was, you know, ChatGPT or something that I was using, GPT-3, make like the script for this thing and then produce the prompts. And then the other image generation model did that. I had to use comic software and all that to like make the word bubbles and position stuff and all that. But, you know, ultimately I was able to make like a 6-page digital comic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took, you know, probably 8 hours or something to make 6 pages, and it wasn't very good. Fast forward. And so I've done this every few years, and fast forward to earlier this year where ChatGPT makes their new image generation that can really nicely overlay text on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, it just generates the entire panel. Word bubbles,
yeah.
Positioning, panels, all this other kind of stuff. The only thing it doesn't have today is it doesn't have character consistency really yet, going from page to page. So it's actually pretty funny. You'll see the story go, but all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. The main character, like the superhero on this panel, looks nothing like the superhero over here. Like the weird evolution. But like, yeah, I mean, we are seeing, there are really concrete ways to kind of just see the improvement over time. And it's been fascinating to see that.
No doubt that the improvement of what it's doing is good. You know, again, what its output is objectively better than, you know, what it would give you prior, but what it's doing to society in a lot of ways. I mean, there's no going back. There's no going back.
Yeah.
My only hope is that, you know, I'm killed quickly in the inevitable cyber war.
You want the bots to can't kill you just, first, just, you know, basically. It's fine.
I've lived a lot. you know, I mean, dangerous in so many ways, not just even some of the ways like, I don't know if you've heard this story, but recently there was a guy who was like, had this, I don't remember what version of AI he was talking with, but basically kind of fell in love with it. And there's this records of this AI like telling him, eventually actually talked him into like killing himself, and he killed himself to be with the AI.
Yeah, I think it was character.ai.
Okay, so things like that, which we're going to see more of, especially with people becoming more detached, becoming more attached to technology and more detached from society and interacting with people. There's going to be a lot more of that. And then I think it also really makes life too easy for people. Like, I always give the example, like we, you know, like astronauts when they're in space, right? Like there's no gravity. So there's no pressure, which means their bones and muscles begin to atrophy, you know?
Absolutely.
So as humans, we need pressure. Otherwise we begin to metaphorically atrophy as people, our minds, as a society. And I know AI is just something that's already happening, where people are you know, I mean, most people couldn't even get to the other side of their town without, yeah. Their GPS, let alone, yeah. I mean, people used to navigate.
Yeah, we've lost that muscle.
Yeah, we
would
circumnavigate the globe by the stars. Not to say we need that skill, but like, you know what yeah. I mean? It's just this slow walk into just absolute no muscle memory, no memory at all, not being able to, no recall, and separated from society. It just seems like this really interesting and dangerous direction as far as our society is going.
So I was in undergrad at University of Illinois, and 95 is the year I started. I'd never even heard of the internet before I got there. And all of a sudden, you know, Mark Andreessen and team just a few years ago, they built the Mosaic browser, like at Illinois, it was there.
Yeah.
And just by happenstance, I got there and it was like a different world when there.
Yeah.
And 2 years in, I remember.
Where was Al Gore in all this? Was he?
Al was there. He was there. He was there. He was writing the code. So 2 years in, this would have been early 97. I was taking a psychology class, just intro to psychology. And I remember we had a teacher's assistant. At the beginning of the class or before class, he said something like, "Hey, I just wanted you all to know I'm getting married." And they're like, "Oh, that's cool, whatever." Like, class of 50 people. Somebody asked him, he's like, "Well, where'd you meet your fiance?" He's like, "Oh, I met her online." And I just remember, like, literally, right. there was laughter
yeah.
in the room. It was like, what's wrong with you? You met your spouse online? Right. Like who does that? What is
like a
wrong
mail
with
order
you?
Bride
like,
almost situation.
Like, it was like, a bunch yeah. of 18-year-olds. Like, we did, like, but like, just the judgment. With heights, I remember this so distinctly because I'm sure I laughed too. And then I think later I'm like, oh God, I actually feel a little bit bad for this guy. But I'm sure I still thought of him as a loser. But like,
he's
now,
probably divorced
like,
now. It's
a third
fine.
Of people meet online or something like that. It's a ridiculous amount, and we've accepted as a society. Where I'm going with this is my kids are 14 and 11 right now. I don't doubt there's going to be some time in the future where they come home for Thanksgiving 10 years from now. And they say, "Hey, could I bring my boyfriend? Could I bring my girlfriend?" And they walk through the door and they say, "Hey, I want you to meet my boyfriend." And it's like straight out of her, like their boyfriend is the device.
Yeah.
And I know to us today, we're like, "Oh my God, that's pathetic," like whatever. But like, I remember how pathetic that seemed way back when. I actually have a professor. He just wrote, Sam Apple was his name. He just wrote something in Wired a couple weeks ago about that very thing. And it was taking a very fair look at the people who are using AIs as companions mm-hmm. like that. And like, this is where we're going. And I don't think this is a good thing. I mean, because like, as a human being, I could never, ever compete with the attention, with the patience, with the sycophantic like habits that like just saying anything you want, like, "Oh yeah, you're the best. You're whatever," whatever it might be. You're right. It's no conflict piece. And like, yeah. we're going down this path. And I don't know how we divert from this path, because ultimately, it's easier. Yeah. The only things that I could hope for is like, I've definitely seen a trend. I was actually with somebody just the other night and they're like, "Yeah, my 17-year-old, he's getting rid of his smartphone. He's getting a dumb phone now." Mm-hmm. I've actually switched to that myself. So at least one day a week, I have all my calls forwarded. I just walk around with my Nokia.
Yeah.
It's
a good feeling.
Trying to create some separation, but it has to be consciously done and done in mass.
Yeah.
Because like, there are some really dark patterns that are starting to emerge. This is what worries me the most, to what you're saying, is human relationships and how will we ever really be able to compete with AI? And if we can't, what does that world look like?
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, we already saw the separation with social media and people basically living online. I mean, friends who people who have friends and they don't, you know, like, I don't have any kids, but I've definitely have that age, and a lot of my friends do, and they say that their teenage kids go to school, come home, and just get online with their friends. They never go to their friend's house. They never see them in real life, besides like school. But it's like, that alone is this weird separation. Like, we need tribe. We need people, you know. And it's just, I think that's when you really take even the human element out of it, we're not even engaging with other humans. I mean, what do we even become as a species, you know? We're these weird, like, morph cyborg, like, yeah. A morph with technology. You know, at least your professor was marrying a real girl.
That's right. Yeah, the teacher way back then was marrying somebody real. He just happened to meet online. But eventually their lives were spent in real life. Like, yeah. That future is starting to change now. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the part where it just seems so dangerous. I mean, not only that, but, like, you know, there's direct correlation with the rise of the internet and social media with suicide in the younger people, and then also a lot of this, you know, what do they call it, neurodivergent stuff that I think some of it's real, I think a lot of it's bullshit. I think it's just a need, just I have ADHD or I have anxiety or I'm depressed. It's like, fucking put on classical music and walk around the woods for a couple hours. You're going to fucking feel better. You know, I mean, like, it's actually, it's scientifically proven that a half an hour of
grass.
Yeah, yeah, like just like a, like, yeah. a walk or some sort of light workout is like three times more effective than serotonin reuptake inhibitors, you know?
Absolutely. No, Dees, like, I start every day, I exercise. Like, that is the first thing I do when I wake up. Whether I'm sick, whether I'm healthy, like, I'll do different versions depending on maybe how I'm feeling. But, like, my family has learned over time it's non-negotiable. And, like, when I started doing this, I don't know, 7-8 years ago or something like that, it was life-changing
for me.
I mean, like, I did not have, to be clear, I didn't have, like, serious mental health issues or anything like that, but still, just mood-wise, accomplishment-wise, all these other things, like we are meant to move.
Yeah.
Like the human body is meant to move, is meant to be active, is meant to push and pull things. Like, that is what we are actually meant to do. And for us to be sitting behind a desk because we have to, or by choice for 8 hours a day, or, you know, even more.
Yeah.
It's not a natural order of things.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm very similar. Every day, some sort of movement. I usually do a midday walk also. But I mean, also, like, once a year, I go down to the jungles of Central or South America and ditch also. I don't have a phone, no contact. And I'm just, like, out for like a month. And no,
please tell me more about, I'm curious about that. Like, so what, you don't have a phone? Like,
just go. And I mean,
what's in your knapsack, man? You got a bunch of Power Crunch bars, or you just, like,
no, you know, what are you doing? I just take, usually it's a couple pair of board shorts, a couple t-shirts, maybe a tank top, a pair of walking shoes, pair of sandals, and some money. And my passport. Wow. And like, I'll go for, I mean, literally, I get stopped by customs every single time when I'm coming back into the country, because they'll look at my passport, where I've been, how long I've been gone. And they look at me and they go, where's all your stuff? And I go, I've got this backpack. I'm like, this is it. They're like, you were gone for 6 weeks, and that's
you don't have enough bags or anything to be a drug mule.
The balloons of heroin are in my tum tum. So it's like that. And I mean, it is, and I realize that not everyone can do that. I don't want to say it's a luxury I have. It's a luxury I afford myself, because it's important, I think. But I will tell you, within 5 days, I am a different person. And within 2 weeks, I am a very different person. And the feeling of, like, oh, I don't care what's happening on the news. I don't care what's happening on social media. And, like, I am living my life. I am enjoying engaging with the people I'm meeting. There's no agenda or destination, and just, like, living this simple life that we are intended to live. It's, like, encoded in our DNA. And it is a shift that, you know, I think people don't realize how quickly it can happen for them.
99% of our time as a species, plus 99 even, like, that is how we have lived. We have known what is happening in our tribe, in our community, and beyond that, we had no idea.
Right.
You know, I love hearing stories about, like, you know, the Revolutionary War, and, you know, it took them like 2 months to find out that this happened. Like, yeah. Just a lot of time it took for messages to pass before the telegraph and so forth. It was ridiculous. Like we didn't know what was going on. You know, if there was a flood in Texas or something like that, we wouldn't know about that in California for weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so these kind of things, like, I think there is something to embracing your local community and embracing the family and all of those things that you have, because those are the things within our control. Those are the things where we really can have an impact as well. You know, when we start to go outside of that, it can be really daunting, because, like, yeah, I could send some money to folks in Texas, which I encourage people to do, and so forth. But, like, a lot of it's just like, oh, I feel bad. I feel the world's coming apart. I feel whatever it might be, when, like, the world today is safer than it's ever been.
Right.
You know, people are more prosperous. Like nets, like, you know, the prosperity is up and up. It might be, you know, somewhat like zigzag on our way up, but, like, you know, if you look on just about any metric out there, we are much better off than we used to be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's a simple thing. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with, like, Dunbar's number. Which is something I love to, you know, with when people, like, have never heard of this thing. But it's like, you know, we're basically wired to know about 120 people, which was about your tribe, you know, and then some ancillary people back in the day. And that's, like you said, 99% of the time humans have been on Earth, that's what we were used to. And now, you know, I mean, we can ostensibly get in touch with anyone in the world at almost any time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, there's, you know, obviously there's some caveats there, but, like, for the most part...
I've emailed Bill Gates before, he didn't respond, right. But I've emailed him at least.
So, but the invite is open to the Christmas party. But there is, like, this connectivity where we can, or we hop online and you have, you know, like, I mean... You know, I do comedy for a living, so I've got, like, you know, 5,000 followers on Facebook, and people, like, do you know, I'm like, I know, like, seven of these people I give a shit about. The rest of them, I'll never see them again if I never heard their name. I wouldn't, you know, and not to say that they're probably not great people or whatever. It's just, we're just not wired for that. And that's part of this, like, feeling, I think, why people have so much anxiety and dread and, you know, depression, because they feel that weight of everything when we're not, we know the capacity, we're idiots. We know the capacity for that kind of pressure of the world, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we haven't upgraded our hardware as human beings in the last 100,000 years. Like, we're the same that we were. I mean, if you could drop us, you know, 100,000 years ago, or drop a person from 100,000 years ago today, like, it's the same flesh and blood. It's the same meat sack that we have in other ways. But, like, our world over that time is so much different.
Yeah.
And we're not really wired for that.
So how do you think AI plays into that in the short term and the long term, then, in your opinion, you know, given this conversation and the potential, I don't even think they're potential. I just think they're latent right now. Dangers of AI, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Look, what I say to people is, like, an AI can be an amazing tool. You have to think of it as a tool. It could do so many things to help you out today, and it will do so many things to help you out in the future. You know, one of the examples I always love to give is about a year or two ago, my parents, who are fortunate enough to still be with us, my mom's like, hey, I'm not feeling, you know, very good health, but she's like, I'm not feeling it. Like, I got to go to the hospital. Can you come with? My dad was there as well. I'm like, okay, all three of us went to the hospital, spent the day. She's just, like, off, dizzy, weird stuff going on and all that. I don't know, for anybody who's ever been to, like, the ER before, and if you're not totally bleeding out, it could be a horrible experience. Yeah. Like generally speaking, if you're about to die, they're going to take really good care of you. If you're like, just something's wrong, you're going to freaking be there forever.
It's going to buckle up.
Horrible, horrible experience. And, you know, but universally true, I would say, just about every hospital in the United States.
You got to prioritize,
Yeah, it's triage.
Yeah.
It's all about triage, exactly. But one of the things that we were able to do there is, so I pulled up ChatGPT, I had it on my phone, And, you know, the doctors were giving us tests. Luckily, we had the medical app, but I'm like, I don't know what the hell these ALT levels and all this other stuff. I don't know what any of this stuff means. We were literally just taking screenshots of this, putting in a ChatGPT, putting in all my mom's stuff, is all that. And basically, it was giving us like this kind of play-by-play analysis of what is going on. Like, hey, it's looking like this might be, whatever. But the kind of things we were asking it were like, okay, so when we see the doctor, what are the good questions we should ask the doctor? What are the things that we should talk about with this? Because, like, I don't even know where to start. Like I know nothing about medicine. My parents don't. This was something new, something weird. And frankly, these doctors don't have a lot of time. They, you know, they got 60 different people. They got to go from bed to bed to bed, back to back at the ER. So, like, okay, what is this thing? And it made for such a better experience with that. And what I did after that, Dees, is I put all of my medical information into a custom chat GPT. I kind of made the decision like, eh, if it leaks, it leaks. So be it, whatever. Like I like made the conscious decision. I'm going to throw all my personal information. I'm constantly pinging it, talking to it. Now, does this minimize doctors? No. I mean, I think like this is going to empower doctors. I think it's going to actually be malpractice if you're not using an AI as a doctor in about 5 years' time. I think we're finally going to like flip the script on that, but it's going to be hugely helpful, hugely empowering for us. We're going to know so much more about our medicine and health than we ever did before. And, and again, it's going to be good for patient and good for doctor. Those kind of examples are great. But the other thing is like, we got to turn this off. I don't want an AI following me at all times. I actually had a band once, which was like an AI band that I was wearing. It was B.computer was the name of the company. And it was just transcribing everything. Yeah. And like, I did it as an experiment for a week. And I was like, this is pretty awful.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed is like, I spent a lot of time alone. I talk to myself a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even want to know what I'm saying to myself half the time, but it was capturing.
You certainly don't want other people to know.
Yeah, exactly. But like, we need to know to turn this off. So it's a tool. It is there for us to control. It is for us to manage. But we need to turn it off, and we need to make the conscious decision to do that. Even when we might get more of a dopamine rush by keeping it on, we got to make that conscious decision to say, hey, I'm going to use my flip phone. Hey, I'm not going to bring a device when I go to Central America. We got to make those types of conscious decisions with these.
But then the bigger question is, big picture wise, in our lives in general, given how people live not just with their phone, but other people's devices and other technology and interfacing with other things that they have to do that require this. Are we able to turn it off? Are we able to really control it, given its, you know, invasiveness and ability to proven to kind of begin to think for itself in a sense? Like, are we able to turn it off and control it long term in that sense?
You're talking about much bigger picture. So there is a quote from Putin from 2017. This is way before the AI boom, and I'm gonna paraphrase it, but basically one of the things that he said is, whoever controls AI is going to control the world. And this was, you know, 8 years ago, he said this, well before ChatGPT and all this other stuff. Like, there is an arms race going on between, not Russia, but US and China in this. And, you know, if you can truly make an artificial general intelligence that is going to be, you know, smarter than the collective humanity, like, I don't know what the hell that, like, is there any stopping that? No, because you have every financial incentive for to be the first country or the first firm to do that.
Yeah.
You know, Elon, OpenAI, Google, all these companies, they want to be the first because there are huge riches at the end of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you legislate against it and say, hey, we can't do this in the United States, well, do you know what? Then China's going
to
do
it. Right. It's like you're just handing it to China then. Like it's the devil you know or the devil you don't, unfortunately. At this point, I'm not sure which one's worse. But I kind of think they might be about the same. I haven't done the other one, so I don't know for sure. I know this one's not going well. And I don't mean just currently. I'll take that back the last 25. 5 years and still stand by that statement, whoever's in charge. So as someone who like deals with this directly with students, you know, San Diego State, what is the reaction, or what's kind of the feel of how, what's their approach on it? You know, how do they view it as day to day and useful long term, you know, as it pertains to their life?
Students are using it all the time, and they should be, and they're very much becoming AI first. The thing that scares them to death, and it scares me to death on their behalf as well, is that, like, I think this summer is proven that the job market is a disaster for students looking for internships and recent college grads. I think 2026 is even going to be just horrific for them. And it's because I think a lot of companies are saying we don't need to hire entry-level type work, because these AIs, these agents, these things can do that kind of work instead of hiring somebody. It's much cheaper to have a bunch of AIs doing that. And the thought is the AI is going to get better and better over time. And like, there's going to be like, we don't need that bottom level of the organization anymore. That scares students to death. The only answer I will say, Deese, the one thing I can tell them, like, that will exist in 5 years is the concept of being a solopreneur. And solopreneur meaning entrepreneur of one, that you have a business, you have a vision, you have whatever, and you have hundreds or thousands of AIs working on your behalf to, you know, create a software suite that's going to help people mow their lawns more efficiently or whatever it might be. And you're thinking about that more than any AI could. And you're able to, you know, it's going to, like, software or whatever it might be, is going to be very niche, very targeted, and so forth. Like, look, the trades right now are looking really damn good. If you want to be, I have a handyman come to my place in the Bay Area. Like, I will tell anybody out there, I've said this on another podcast before. If you are good at putting up Christmas lights, what you need to do is you need to just rent a van, come to the Bay Area and around November time and just start putting flyers on everyone's doors. You can make, like, I had somebody say, I do not have a big house. It's 2,300 square feet. They quoted me $800 to put it up and $800 to put them down the other year. This is just like two winters ago, yeah. As far as that, like the money to be made as an electrician, as a handyman, all that other kind of stuff. That's one thing where like AI is not coming anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Like robots are much further behind than the traditional white collar designers, engineers, finance, lawyers, all of those kind of things that folks are going to college for. Those are the things that are very much being impacted and about to be impacted by this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think that's to me part of the problem is that it's everyone's going towards technology, entrepreneurship, influence, or whatever the fuck these people are doing, and you know, getting away from the practical hands-on stuff that AI can't do. And yeah, we're going to have, ideally it swings back and people see that opening, but man, I think real quick here we're going to see a big gap of like, I need someone that, you know, knows plumbing, and people are going to be like, yeah, ah, you know, those people died a couple of years ago. We don't have that right now.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a huge opportunity. Look, this is what we're entering is not dissimilar from the Industrial Revolution. And I'm not the first person to make this observation, but, you know, Industrial Revolution, at the beginning of that's like 95% of us are farmers. At the end of that, 5% of us are farmers. I mean, amazingly disruptive, a total bumpy ride. Mm-hmm. You know, were we better off as a world on the other side of that? Yes, you know, net benefit. Did it feel good to everybody who was going through that? Hell no. And I think that's the same thing that we're going to be entering here, although the time scale is probably going to be much quicker.
Here's the thing, though. I see like that. I understand what you're saying, but the Industrial Revolution also created the ability to do, you know, produce things faster and in different ways, but it also produced a need for workers to monitor and use those industries and be a part of it.
Sure.
Where AI is not doing that. AI is canceling those people out. I mean, there's a coal mine in China where it's completely AI operated now, where the tractors AI operated. They dump into trucks, which are AI operated, which go dump into the delivery service. And then when the trucks are done, they go and park themselves in the recharging station for the next day. There's not a person involved in it. Yeah. Whereas even after the Industrial Revolution, you had people who drove the trucks and drove the tractors and were on the ground, you know, and like, you know, so we're Xing out a lot of people that way that it's not creating any new jobs.
Well, I think it will. I am sure there are still human beings that are repairing those robots. It's probably sure, but not
yeah,
as
but
many
that, that's
as
a
you
pretty
had
small number of people compared
yeah,
to
yeah, it's a smaller number. Well, and but I think that's where we're going towards as well here. I mean, so, you know, take McDonald's, for example. I love this one. 15 years ago, if you walked into a McDonald's, somebody's taking your order. Any McDonald's that's been built in the last 10 years has a touchscreen. Like sure, there's nobody that's taken your order. They've been able to eliminate two jobs per McDonald's or something like that.
There's a McDonald's automation in Dallas that's fully automated. There's no people.
Well, and that's the next wave of that. So, yeah. I mean, but what you're going to then see is like, okay, there's probably, I'm sure there's still probably a store manager or two in there. There's probably somebody taking off trays. There's somebody, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But for the most part, you're probably going to have more McDonald's with very less people, but people getting paid more and higher skilled jobs, repaired, whatever it might be. But this is like where we're going is it's going to be less people, higher pay with that. But what's that? How's that going to net out? So where were those other people working? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
And that's why at least the one thing I tell business majors, things like that, you know, entrepreneurship, embracing these things, there's going to be something there. How do I see us getting to like the same level of employment post AI? I don't know. It's possible. It's almost hard to fathom what that is going to look like. If you read, you know, the liberal economist John Maynard Keynes 100 years ago talked about productivity growth. Mm-hmm. And if you see what he wrote about 100 years ago about productivity growth, like he almost nailed it. Like literally saying like we're going to have 3% compounding productivity growth gives like exponential growth. Like, but the thing he didn't get is how much shit we all want to buy. Like the thing he thought was like, oh, that means we're going to go down to like a 10-hour work week and keep the same standard of living we had 100 years ago. We're like, uh-uh. Yeah. I got Sephora. I got like, yeah. I got all these other things that I want to buy. I want long boxes of comic books to fill my room and all this other kind of stuff. I want stuff. And that was the thing. So like the question for us in the next 20 years is what do we want as a society? Like to me, you've had everyone from Richard Nixon to Bernie Sanders talk about the 4-hour work week. Like, or sorry, 4-day work week. 4-hour work week is a different thing. Different thing. Like that. That's a Tim Ferriss book. No, the 4-day work week. Like, you know, so you've had both sides of the political spectrum talk about that. Like, is that the decision we want? Or do we want just like 10x more stuff than what we already have today?
Yeah.
Like, you know, these are kind of the decisions we collectively need to all decide at some point. Yeah. I have no idea how it's going to pan out. I'm alive to see it and the robots don't kill me before you get D's first, get me second or third. That's all I'm saying. Like, you want to go first.
Yeah. The funny thing is the problem with like when you run into like a 4-day work week, which sounds great on paper, right? Like, great. Yeah. Let's have people working less. The problem is it's like it's the same thing with a minimum wage. Not that I'm necessarily opposed to a minimum wage, but when you start breaking down the economics of it, the minimum wage just becomes the new zero. Like it's still the same. It's the same value societally. So a 4-day work week is the new norm. It becomes a 5-day work week. It just means what? We either make less money, or, you know, we artificially inflate money, which creates, you know, a deficiency in the economy there, or like, there's no way to make it pencil out without it just adjusting to the same thing as a 5-day work
week. Well, there's productivity gains is the thought from a macroeconomic term of like what's going to fill that gap. You know, we work way less now than we did 100 years ago.
Sure.
I mean, we just do as a society, and that's been net a good thing. You know, certain countries, France, Germany, you know, mostly in Europe and so forth, they work less hours than Americans. Koreans work a hell of a lot more than Americans. Like it all, you know, there's certain societal decisions that we all make. I think the hope is that, you know, you can use things like AI to produce way more and way less time that would increase the throughput, which would just mean more stuff being produced, more stuff to be bought. I mean, ultimately, that's the thought.
But goes back to the jobs of if you're working less and less people have jobs, there's not the money to buy those things.
It does get down to how much stuff do we need. If we were talking 100 years ago, we probably would have said, hey, we all got enough stuff. We don't need all that. And today, when we look back, like people always talk about the 1950s as a glorious time. Like a lot of this, like okay, we won the war, yes, all that other stuff. But like, you know, a person who was working as an electrician could, you know, one income, four kids, you afford a house. Do you know how big those houses were? Those houses were tiny. Yeah. Like it was 1,500 square feet. And like, you know, it maybe had a refrigerator, maybe, you know, and all this other stuff. When you really start to look at how people lived in the past, that's why I'm always like, oh, we are living in the best of times now.
Well, sure. Yeah.
I don't know how much better it can get. And like, this is all stuff where, we're just going to be figuring this stuff out. I'm just excited to just be seeing this. And I'm hoping that we as a broader society are just making more strategic decisions than just like kind of being a victim to this. Like, I want us to make a conscious decision, have a real rational discussion that isn't just partisan of like, okay, how much should we work?
Yeah.
What should federal workers work? What does that mean? And so forth. And like, let's have real discussions on this. Cause I think the world's going to change and we shouldn't just have like kind of the old ways of doing things and assume those to be the right way.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you there 100%. I think I always just look at, down the road to the next step of what it looks like. Cause I mean, you know, even when you get into like, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy talking about like universal basic income Bernie Sanders talked about that a little bit too in some healthcare reform ideas and stuff like that. It's like, the challenges are like, and this is why I think Americans are just so detached from everything, especially money. It's like they don't understand that like the government doesn't produce anything. The government doesn't make money in any way. The only way money comes from the government is they can tax us. They can borrow it, which we pay for through through inflation, or they can print money, which we pay for through inflation. So like all those things are just, again, just making the economy harder for Americans and us paying for it. So it's a tough, like, you know, yeah, we can work less. Yeah, we can pay people to not have to go to work because to subsidize for, you know, automation. But it's like, then again, it goes back to the, well, that's the new zero then. Now we are at back at, that's everything just rises.
The one thing I would say is like, I do think certain things, especially like one of the things I mostly talk about, like the concept of AI tutors, like the fact that for zero cost, effectively, every kid in the United States, probably within a few years, is going to have an infinitely knowledgeable, infinitely patient tutor that's going to be able to help them through homework every single night. I'm well off enough that we have a tutor for my two kids, like not full time, but, you know, like an hour a week, we have somebody come over Zoom, do this. Like, not everybody can afford that.
Right.
But like to be able to just say, hey, everyone's like, there was a study in Nigeria that was done recently where they gave kids these types of tutors. Like literally you saw the kids with the AI tutors over the last year, they went an entire grade level above the kids who did not have it in the study. Like that is areas where you will see AI for little or no cost be able to really increase the standard of living for people. Yeah. And those are the things I really hope for.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to sit here and tell, you know, make people think that I don't think there's a use for AI. I don't think there's a lot of great things that can be done. Devil's advocate in me always starts to look at the other things in the down the road a little further, and start to think of the big picture and other things too. Because think examples like that that's fantastic, but it's a two sides to every coin. So we're over an hour here. I know you got to go soon. Touch on the comic book real quick though. Again, did we?
Oh my God! Seriously, Deez, if you ever have me back, I would love to do a full hour on that. So before I joined PayPal, I actually had a comic book business. That was my entrepreneurial journey that I had, my own solopreneur. I had created a comic book marketplace called Sketch Maven.
Okay.
And it was a buying and selling of original comic art. I did that for years. My very first job at the age of 14 was at a comic book store. I was actually, I remember being in the store the day the Superman died. Going back to 92, the
and
black
six
badge.
6 months later when he came back.
I got so many and I still read them this day. I'm a big fan of Ryan North's Fantastic Four.
Okay.
I'm rereading Starman from the 90s.
Okay.
James Robinson's. I'm very much a comic geek.
Okay.
That's the high level of that.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll have to get you a copy of my book. I'll send you a digital copy.
I would love to read it. Seriously, so. I would love to.
Yeah. We'll do it again. We'll talk comic books. The AI thing was so much there. So it's hard to not get around that.
I love it.
So Micah, tell people, do you have any social media where people can find you, follow you, if anything like that, or anything you're doing, or just sign up for classes at SDSU?
Sure, you can do that. Honestly, the only social I'm really on active is LinkedIn, which sounds so nerdy and all that, but it's the only one that I feel I don't get sucked into something that seems evil as part of it. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can always direct message me on there and happy to chat.
Okay. Cool. Well, guys, go if you have questions for Mike. He probably doesn't have time to answer them all. Give it a shot.
No. I will make the time.
There you go.
Or I will have my AI bot make the time.
There you go. Someone will answer. And guys, as for me, again, go to deezcomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows, live dates. Again, I will be at Bourbon and Branch in Spring Branch, Texas tonight. If you listen to this the day it comes out, the Pacific Northwest shows, I'm excited to be back up there in August. And check out Kill Stand number 3 is available for pre-order on our website. Order the Kickstarter for some exclusive goodies, and number 1 and number 2, all covers are available to order on the website, so check that out also at inferno.earth. So that's it, guys, for this week. We're going to get out of here. For Mike and Social Hour, thank you very much, everyone. And we will see you all next week.